All right, that's it for Chicks Voices. Thanks so much for tuning in. Again, my name is Emily, and I so much appreciate it. Up next, Truth Quest with Melody. Stay tuned.
Gonna tell you a story not long ago. Sold off shotgun to a deputy.
Don't shoot me down.
Don't shoot me down.
Don't shoot me down.
Don't shoot me down.
Got a wife and kids on Ruby Ridge.
Please don't shoot me down.
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 Got a wife and kids on Ruby Ridge.
Please don't shoot me down. My good dog killed my boy, my only son, my pride and joy. They shot my wife dead on the floor, holding our baby in the cabin door.
Don't shoot me down.
Don't shoot me down.
Don't shoot me down.
Don't shoot me down.
Got a wife and kids on Ruby Ridge.
Please, please don't shoot me down.
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 Got a wife and kids on Ruby Ridge.
Please don't shoot me down. And you want to go build a cabin in Idaho, in Idaho. If you're living free, boys, don't sell no shotgun, no deputy.
Don't shoot me down.
Don't shoot me down.
Don't shoot me down.
Don't shoot me down.
Got a wife and kids on Ruby Ridge.
Please don't shoot me down.
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 Got a wife and kids on Ruby Ridge.
Please don't shoot me down.
On Ruby Ridge,
please don't shoot me down. You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody. This is KHENLP 106.9, LPFM Radio 106.9, Salida, Colorado. Oh, okay. We're trying out something a little bit different. I've got somebody in the studio that's kind of working with me a little bit here, and it's Shannon Hemingway.
Hello.
And support for KHAN and Truth Quest is brought to you by Kevin Barnes, agent for Land Property Incorporated's Little River Ranch, offering beautiful land home packages with underground utilities and river access just 3 miles from historic downtown's Salida. Find out more at Colorado Home Properties or call Kevin at 207-0858.
And we are streamed on the internet at khan.org. If you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they are available on the www.givemesometruth.info or linked from the khan.org website. If you'd like to send an email into the program for questions with our guests, our email address is khan.dj@gmail.com.
Eric and Dr. I have my special guest this evening is Michael Shaw, and my co-host this evening is Professor Carlstrom. Are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Okay, great. And let's see here. Okay. Michael Shaw is a licensed attorney and certified public accountant. He's made a career in real estate, having developed a multi-state chain of self-storage projects, and he's president of freedomadvocates.org. and speaks on how sustainable development is designed to transform America. He's also proprietor of Liberty Garden, a native plant oasis located on the central coast of California. He is a litigant in cases against Santa Cruz and Alameda counties in connection with the application of sustainable policy. Dr. Carlstrom, would you like to go ahead and begin with Michael Shaw?
No, Melody, you go ahead.
Okay.
I'll follow you.
All right. All right. Well, no, Michael, we had you in the past come on the program, and I thought it was great to have you back again because this thing with the sustainable development and Agenda 21 is really going to start heating up more and more as far as needing to get the information out. And I'll have to tell you, I've found myself kind of hitting a few brick walls trying to get the information out when I try to approach some of the leadership in my area. Would you have any suggestions, and is there any on how we go about that?
Well, I do. The problem with leadership, whether you're Democrat or Republican, if you are an official in party operative politics, you are really forced to be committed to sustainable policies. You may not know what it is. You may not have even heard the term. But both parties are fully committed to the sustainable ideology. The last four presidential administrations have been thoroughly committed to cooperate with the United Nations in terms of implementing sustainable development. And so you're not going to find friendly ears in the first place. It is a large secret to the American people. It is not something that anyone gets rewarded for in either party for bringing it to the public's attention. So their job, if they want to be advanced in their party apparatus, is to just neutralize discussion of sustainable development policy. What I would suggest, I mean, our focus for the last 8 years has been to develop what we call neighborhood tools. These are pamphlets and videos and other writings and radio dynamics that can be circulated to your friends and neighbors and to your politicians. I mean, some of them have an honest spirit within them, and when they come to understand that they, whatever party they are, whatever level of government they're operating on, are working to the implementation of a globalist program designed by the United Nations, designed for the purpose of abolishing private property, designed to educate the youth to become global citizens, and ultimately designed to control all human action and massively reduce human population on Earth. Some people, even though they have designed a career in politics within one party or the other, some people will begin to put up the flag and say, wait a minute, I'm not a supporter of sustainable development. I think the best tools you might use are some of the pamphlets that we've produced, because they're uncontrovertible facts in these pamphlets, and somebody who wants to defend sustainable development or hide the ball simply won't be able to do it.
Well, I found that I've taken some of the books of Agenda 21, which are abridged books, because actually the document itself is something like 1,100 pages, and it's rather pricey in its own right. So I had to get the library to order it, and they did agree and purchased one copy. But I also found that it probably would help to have both copies of it because they're kind of set up differently in explanation of what Agenda 21 is. And
let me explain those books that you're referring to, so the audience has a better take on it.
Okay.
The guiding and main document is the Earth Summit Agenda 21. It's the United Nations Program of Action from Rio. That was the conference held in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, where Agenda 21 was pronounced upon the world. 178 nations signed the Agenda 21 document. That meant that they were to take the document home and implement it as a soft law policy in each of their countries and report back to the United States, report back to the United Nations on a periodic basis. Now, George Bush, the senior, was there and signed the United States up on behalf of it. Now, the other documents that control sustainable development policy, Agenda 21 is a synonym for sustainable development, were the 1,300-page Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. Now, that's the report that calls for the abandonment of everything we know and everything we do in America. And on page 773 of that document, it calls for a reduction of human population to 1 billion people. That means 6 out of 7 people you pass on the street are designed to be eliminated. Now, this is the treaty proposal that was signed by the United States. It's a tough concept to swallow that our leaders would actually be implementing a program with that kind of design. It's clear that the private property is simply to be abolished, that all societies are to become collective in nature. And we can certainly look at the activities of the Obama administration just in these last few months and see that, well, if they're going to take over the car company, they can take over your company. They can take over any company. And in fact, that is the program designed by Agenda 21, Sustainable Development. So you've got those two documents. The Agenda 21 document itself is about 250 pages, and this Global Biodiversity Assessment Report is about, I think you're right, it's 1,100 pages.
Well, let me ask you, Michael, it was my understanding that Dr. Michael Kaufman was able to get Congress not to ratify the Biodiversity Treaty. Isn't that correct?
Well, Congress never did ratify the Biodiversity Treaty. They've implemented it every step of the way, however. Agenda 21 itself is not a treaty. It is a, quote, soft law policy that the politicians are just supposed to implement by way of specific legislation or by way of regulation or policy apparatus. But the Biodiversity Assessment Report was never voted upon by the Senate, but we can look at the Wildlands Project, the setting aside of lands that can't be timbered, the introduction of wild animals, the closure of roads, all the processes that were included in that treaty are being implemented as though it were a treaty. So while it has not been formally adopted by the U.S. Senate, it is being implemented by Congress in some cases and by certainly by federal agencies in other cases, and of course as well by state governments.
Don't you find that what's taking place here is that they're actually acting as though the Agenda 21 is the overriding legislation, even though it isn't legislation on our part, but it seems to be the overriding, I can't think of the word I want.
Plan.
Plan. And so all the local governments, all the county governments and state governments and all of that are implementing it in such a way that it is the overriding. I mean, it even overrides the Constitution in certain respects. They're acting as though it's already there, and that's what you're saying.
Well, there's no question about that. If you go through the policies that are called for in Agenda 21 in the Biodiversity Assessment Report, you can see without exception they are being ticked off. There's no question that our government at all levels are implementing this. Now, they're doing it with a lot of help because most people have heard the term NGO or non-governmental organization. Well, there are approximately 2,000 NGOs operating within the United States. What people don't know is what an NGO is. What gives you the status of being an NGO? Well, NGOs are organizations accredited by the United Nations for purposes of implementing sustainable development. So when the Sierra Club or the Audubon Society has a land use program for your area, that is coming straight to the bureaucracy established by the UN, approved of by the federal government for a plan or a program in your community.
I almost get the feeling that what's taking place in the last few months has been, like the North American Union has even been in effect, and the only thing missing is them saying that. I mean, by the way, they ignore the boundaries, and yet even with the flu epidemic and that sort of thing, the very first thing that would have normally happened would have been to close down those borders, and that didn't happen.
Well, the commitment by those in government, many of them knowing, others just being dutiful followers, is for the implementation of a globalist order. And Agenda 21 is the pathway. It is the, you know, it is the approved worldwide program for creating a world of one singular government. And it's propping its head in a thousand different ways. The globalists themselves, the Agenda 21ers, break their action plan. It's always an action plan. If you see something characterized as an action for your local community, you can pretty well bet that it has globalist operatives standing behind it, because that's their favorite word. Action is used in our community, for instance. What it means is Agenda 21, community teamwork in operation now. And you take the first letter of all those words, it spells action. So this is something that is spread across the country. Everybody has their action plan for succumbing to this globalist order. And the citizens, you know, some of them think, oh, this is too complicated. Others think, oh, this couldn't be, you know. We love Barack Obama, or a few of them said, we love George Bush. And certainly most people say, well, they can't be working together on this thing. Well, they are. Both parties are like two divisions of one engine with a single goal. And that single goal is a world government. That's what Agenda 21 Sustainable Development is designed
for. Just to define it again for people, I can't remember if you stated it, Michael, but Agenda 21 stands for Agenda for the 21st Century. And it would seem to me that, now you've been involved with this issue for some dozen years, isn't that correct? Because you have been involved in local politics in the Santa Cruz area. It seems to me that people who are not involved in any kind of local or regional or state-level politics perhaps would be completely unaware of these trends that you're speaking of, because they're not publicized a great deal.
Well, I think everybody's aware of the trends. The dollar's falling apart. The rural lands and landowners are under attack. Our cities are becoming very dense with what everybody's heard the term smart growth development. I mean, build them up and get people out of their cars, put them on trains and trolleys. So people have seen many of the fingers of sustainable development. They just haven't tied it together, and that's what the government works very hard to keep us from being able to do. Now, I've I became aware in the year 2000 and got a booster after 9/11, because it's easy, once you understand sustainable development, to see how events like 9/11 can be used to accelerate the pace of creating a one world government and for the policies necessary to fully abandon the principles of the U.S. Constitution. And, once you can see it from the large picture, you can take it home. And I can challenge anyone, once they understand the dynamic, to not be able to see sustainable development being implemented by the programs being reported in your local newspaper is impossible. I can go to any town and just smell out sustainable development implementation by looking at one day's newspaper. It's happening everywhere. It's happening fast. It's happening under a veil. And the only thing that's going to stop it is the listener's awareness. It takes a little study. I had a person in Santa Cruz last night tell me, oh, Michael, people's eyes glaze over. This is too complicated. And in the next breath, she was talking about how tears came to her eyes when she thinks about how the Constitution is being abandoned. Well, there's a reason for this. There's a program behind it. It was Nikita Khrushchev who said in 1959, we will bury you, America, without firing a shot. Well, Sustainable Development, Agenda 21, has been in the works for a long time. It was 1992 when they announced it on the world. But Nikita Khrushchev knew what he was talking about. President Woodrow Wilson in 1918 talked about sustainable development in the context that it's now being used. And I think most historians would describe him as a globalist sympathizer. So the roots for this dynamic run very deep and for a long time. I mean, the power mongrels in the world have forever wanted to have a single world government so that all human action can be controlled. Today, with the technology that the world enjoys, or maybe suffers from, that kind of control becomes very feasible. All they need to do is to unify the principles of government, and the technology will be there to monitor our every move. Now, those principles of government are united on one theme at the core. And at the core, what this world government dynamic is committed to do is to not recognize that special nature of American experience, which is the political recognition of each individual's unalienable rights. That is, you have a right to your life, to liberty, and to the use and enjoyment of your property. Well, the globalist movement is for human rights. Human rights, animal rights, there's really not much difference. Those in power, those men in power, grant you your rights. This group gets these rights, that group gets those rights. The rights can be changed, they can be abolished in accordance with what those in control say. And of course, the miracle of the American experience is that our government from the outset recognized that government exists to protect those unalienable rights that are imbued within each human spirit, not to take those rights. The first government in the history of the world to do that. And we're now on the verge of abandoning that notion. And that's why there's so much discontent in the country today and so much frustration. You know, we start by to undermine that by creating a monetary system that is bogus. The good news is that more and more Americans are understanding the bogus nature of the monetary system as it is operated by the globalist operatives in the Federal Reserve. Now, that's not our subject tonight, but it certainly ties in. When people begin to understand that our money is simply created out of thin air and then loaned out by globalist bankers to the American government so that we can all be indebted to these globalist bankers and pay interest every year, so much interest that after 100 years of the American Federal Reserve, these globalist bankers can buy up every industry that counts, from the political parties to the news and entertainment venues to the important industries.
Well, don't people have to also realize that, I mean, this thing has been compartmentalized to unbelievable levels, and that in implementing a lot of these policies, they're using a lot of non-governmental organizations, which can slip outside of a lot of the government regulations. And so when you have, and and many of these have names and things of that sort that have no association whatsoever with this Agenda 21. And in fact, today I was looking up the Heritage Foundation because we have Heritage Foundation lands getting designated to heritage lands done on a national basis, but we also have heritage lands within our national parks, correct?
No, I'm confused when you talk Heritage Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Washington, D.C. Yeah, I am too. We have national heritage areas. We have world heritage areas. But I don't think that they are connected to the Heritage Foundation. I think that's a different program.
This is what I'm trying to, you know, I won't go any further on that because I don't want to confuse you anymore on that. That was what was the purpose of what I was looking at today, because there is a connection. They were started by a lot of the same people, but that isn't my area of expertise. I was just trying to find the connection today that there is a connection. But it doesn't. Again, this is an instance where they're not connected, just like sustainable development isn't connected to Agenda 21.
But I would argue that the Heritage Foundation, certainly the Brookings Foundation, and even the Cato Foundation, are all funded by sources that are sustainable development, Agenda 21, dynamics.
Right.
That's why you don't hear anything from the think tanks about sustainable development. When I first started this, my big effort was on those think tanks that I assumed were predicated on the ideals of liberty. But I soon learned, to my great and continuing disappointment, that there is no help coming from the think tanks, whether they be right or left, in regards to the exposure of sustainable development. They all know what sustainable development is, and they all know where sustainable development is going, but they're so tied into the money sources that is so connected to the core of Agenda 21 that they don't say anything. Now, the heritage sites that you're talking about are sites all across the country, including, you know, the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, that have been designated as heritage sites, and I'm not an expert on this subject, but I do know the net result is that once you're designated by Congress as a heritage site, you then come under the control, the management control, of the United Nations.
Right, and I in a minute I'll try to bring that up so I can kind of make that connection for us, but because it is going to be significant, because we had several areas, counties in our state that were it was even hard to get maps and information on it when Ken Salazar had participated in having these counties become national heritage sites.
It's a scandal. And it's a scandal that's not well exposed. My mind is slipping. There is a group back east that has done a good job on exposing exactly that, and including its connection to the globalist political movement that is best characterized as the Agenda 21 movement.
Let me give you a quote here. Michael, which one of my students found for me, it says here at the top of the page, quote of the century, it's by Mikhail Gorbachev, 1996, of course, former prime minister or premier of the former Soviet Union, the threat of environmental crisis will be the, quote, international disaster key that will unlock the New World Order. This was in a special report, The Wildlands Project Unleashes Its War on Mankind, by Marilyn Brannan. Would you care to comment on that quote?
Well, it's marvelous when these dirty dogs speak the truth. You know, we normally don't think of these political tyrants as guys who speak the truth. But there's an amazing number of quotes. I mean, John Rockefeller has some incredible quotes himself along the same line. This is exactly what they intend to do. Kissinger, after the financial tumble earlier this year, said that this is the crisis we've been waiting for to create our new world order. So that kind of quote has been made by a lot of the leaders in this globalist movement, and if we don't take them seriously, we're going to find ourselves the subjects of a world government that does not recognize your right to life, much less liberty or property. And at that point, all things begin to really fall apart.
Yeah, going back to the depopulation issue, which apparently is written into the biodiversity assessment report that we have been kind of been implementing piecemeal. There are many wildlife ecologists, in particular biologists, etc., who write position papers that the human population far exceeds the quote-unquote carrying capacity of the Earth for humans. And then in order to save the environment from human activities, we need to radically reduce the population. And you even hear, calls for introducing Ebola viruses and things like that. They do this in some of their conferences, I gather, sometimes to standing applause. I have a little email here by talking about a University of Texas evolutionary ecologist who addressed the 109th meeting of the Texas Academy of Science at Lamar University in Beaumont, Texas in 2006. More recent than that. And he actually thought it would be a good thing if 90% of the human population were wiped out by this virus. He said so aloud, and people gave him a standing ovation. So there is amongst the environmental, I would say the radical environmentalists, this kind of misanthropic view that humans are the problem, that we are no better than a virus, that we are no better than any other organism or a microorganism even, and therefore we need to cull the herd, to use some of their own terms. So this is also widespread.
That's right. I might take issue with only one thing you said. You characterized them as radicals. I would say they're not radicals. They're dead center on what the political power existent here in the United States and all around the world is focused on. I mean, the political powers are the ones who have subscribed to this biological assessment report, and that's what calls for the massive reduction in the human population. So these so-called radical environmentalists who preach this to their home crowd, so to speak, are really very mainstream, because that's exactly what our political process is implementing. And of course, when things like the swine flu come along, it makes you wonder. I'm not a scientist, and I'm certainly not a health expert, but there's enough implication here to make one wonder just what produced, or how did this virus come into being. Such a virus certainly fits the political objectives of the center field globalists that exist all around the world, and that tie people like Mikhail Gorbachev and George Bush and Bill Clinton and Tony Blair and the European leaders all together. It's an amazing phenomenon. But when someone sits back and begins to look at the operating cohesiveness of this globalist movement, begins to understand how it is that NGOs play such a pivotal role, how academia has such a focus on all the elements of Agenda 21, and how it is that so many of our business leaders, academic leaders, political leaders are all tied in together on this dynamic. When we come to understand how the money system was created by these folks, created so that all the money ends up in their pocket. They create money. It's debt to someone owing to them. You can begin to see that after several centuries of this funny money system, the centers of economic power are very concentrated. And if those concentrated centers of economic power are designed to have world control, and by now they've created all these NGOs and political operations and operatives who are working to that end, we ought to let our knees quake a little bit, because we are in a deep hole. That doesn't mean we can't get out of it, but we better work fast and work hard.
Don't non-governmental organizations, are they not sanctioned under the UN? Is that how they get their charters?
Well, an NGO is accredited by the United Nations for the purpose of implementing Agenda 21. So that's the Sierra Club, the Audubon Society,
Well, it's just about
the board. You know, I mean, there's 2,000 organizations, and they're the Chamber of Commerce. I mean, it's the organizations we deal with every day that we read about in the newspaper all the time. They don't seem like bad guys. I mean, but there are bad guys in the Chamber of Commerce. There are pure globalists in the Chamber of Commerce. George Bush's brother is the head of the International Chamber of Commerce and deals primarily with the Chamber of Commerce in China.
Well, don't they also have a forum? I mean, when you have your Council of Governments and you were talking about on one interview with Dr. Monteith about the ICLEI, I-C-L-E-I?
I do want to get to ICLEI today. That's one of the NGOs, international NGOs. ICLEI is its full name is the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. That's ICLEI. ICLEI operates on this continent out of Toronto, Canada, and it has roughly 500 U.S. municipal communities signed up as dues-paying members. ICLEI is sanctioned by the United Nations for purposes of implementing the Agenda 21 program, and it it's here in Santa Cruz, and it's Santa Cruz is one of their first trial sites across the United States. Let me give a list of Coloradan communities that are dues-paying members of this international NGO designed to bring sustainable development policies into those communities. Arvada, I don't know how to pronounce that. Mm-hmm. Aspen, Boulder, I mean that one's obvious. Breckenridge, Carbondale, Denver, I mean Denver may be taking over from San Francisco as a real leader. Durango, Frisco, Golden, Gunnison County, La Plata, Lafayette, Loveland, Manitou Springs, San Miguel, and Westminster. Now, some of those may be counties and not cities. But these are the communities within Colorado that pay dues to ICLEI for ICLEI to use its what they call tool chest to come into your community and get it on the Agenda 21 locomotive. Now, let's just step back a minute. The cardinal principle of Agenda 21 is the piece-by-piece abolition of private property. Ranchers and farmers in Colorado, across the country, but let's focus on Colorado, are under massive attack from these globalist institutions. I also want to talk tonight about the land conservation agreements that are floating all around the country that have blown up in the state of Colorado. All of this fits together as pieces of the action plan for Agenda 21. The idea is to have this organization that is stationed on every continent in the world, designed to implement Agenda 21 on that continent, on a local basis. Sustainable development is not about placing armies on the border and marching through. Sustainable development is about taking globalist ideals and implementing them at the local level. Well, that's what this ICLEI organization does everywhere.
Did they utilize something like that when they implemented the European Union? Are you aware?
I didn't understand the first part.
Did they implement that ICLEI-type system when they tried to bring in the European Union?
Well, ICLEI exists in Europe. The order of its operation in the context of the the evolution of the common market and into the European Union is not something that I know. But the principles are all the same. They've got a different objective operating in Europe because they don't have this big hurdle with European countries. There was never any recognition of an individual's unalienable right. You know, the right to property in France, Germany, or Italy was always dependent upon some governmental cooperation. And so the focus for ICLEI would not have been as intense there, I don't think, because they were already ready-made for the political, economic, and philosophical makings of the Sustainable Development Program. Here in the U.S., it was different. They had to get in so that they can undermine this uniquely American concept of private property and of unalienable rights. And that's where the environmental call became so useful. Well, we must take this landowner's use of his land away from him, because if we do, we'll save the environment. Well, that's the rule of ICLEI. So they have a unique role here in the United States, I'd say.
But you also have other organizations like UNESCO and UNEP, and there's the UNEP. Are you familiar with the UNEP, Michael?
Somewhat okay. I am.
I mean, they all have different avenues that they seem like they've been designated to incrementally work on our constitutional rights in as much as down to land grants and things of that sort and into our water. And being that we're working in a situation right now where there's a private company wanting to come in. And where are you on the fact that when you have these private companies, it seems to me that there's something going on with the UN where this is almost like they're giving concessions to certain companies to take over certain resources or certain areas of development or certain types of businesses or in industries. Have you noticed anything of that sort?
Well, yes, you're astute. That's the core of sustainable development. But let me just describe that a little bit and broaden that discussion. Sustainable development hangs itself really on three pillars. The first pillar they call equity. And by equity, they mean the system of justice. And the goal for the equity implementation in the U.S. is to change our law away from the principles of equal justice, as called out for in our Declaration of Independence, to a system of social justice. I mean, you can go today into a court. You can read the biography of judges sitting on trial court levels and higher courts, and you'll find many judges say that they are advocates of the principles of social justice. Well, the equity provisions of sustainable development call for a system of social justice in replacement of the principles of equal justice. Now, unalienable rights are dependent upon a system of equal justice as developed in America over the last 200 plus years. But increasingly, we move to a system of social justice where there are no unalienable rights, where there is no right to the use of and enjoyment of private property, where there are no granted liberties. It is what is in the interest of society, social justice, rather than the interest of the individual, equal justice. So our whole system of justice is being turned on its head, and the U.S. Supreme Court is cooperating in that. The Kelo case is an example. The Kelo case came right after an even more significant case called Lingle versus Chevron, a Hawaiian case. And in that case, a 9-0 decision, the court said that the public purpose requirement of the Fifth Amendment was no longer required. If the government wanted to give your property to a business, they could do that. And then Kelo followed, just implementing, you know, that principle. So our system of justice is being changed. Now, you raised the question about the economics. Well, the second leg of sustainable development is called economics. And the economic dynamic is to change us from a system of free enterprise to a system that they politely call public-private partnership. Now, Mussolini didn't have such a term for his economic methodology. He called it economic fascism. That is where government cooperated with certain businesses for the implementation of public goals. We're seeing this in the United States routinely now. The Obama takeover of GM, firing its president, is an example. But we're seeing it far deeper than that. We've been seeing it for longer than Obama has been president. We are shifting to a system where if you're not a partner with government, you don't do business. And if you do continue to do business, it's pretty hard if you're a home builder, say, and you're working off your own money and you're buying materials, building houses, and selling it. It's really difficult to compete with a guy down the street who is a public-private partner receiving mass amounts of government money to build to government standards, to build so-called affordable housing that then is subsidized by government for the benefit of government's preferred buyers. Well, once you start working a partnership between home builders and government, free enterprise and private property is a thing of the past. And we're in that process now. It's moving very fast. It's clear that Obama is accelerating that at a rate that surpasses anything we've seen before. Now, the third leg of sustainable development is the environment. That's the excuse, and it's also the distraction. Everybody wants to save the warm and fuzzy animals, and so, gee, they jump right on the sustainable development bandwagon because it promises to save the warm and fuzzy animals. Our system of justice is being pulled out from under us. Our system of economics is being shifted to fascism. This is what's happening in America today. It's what's happening community after community after community. There are no exceptions.
If I could jump in here, Michael, that was a very good description of the three pillars. Now, just going back to the public-private partnerships, as I understand it, this is a cooperation between multinational corporations, perhaps taking the lead role in cooperation with government and non-governmental organizations. So there's kind of a structure to these public-private partnerships, or PPPs. And I would like to kind of pull in a local example for Colorado, and that is the issue of Lexham's attempt to drill three 14,000-foot gas test wells on the brand newly designated Bakken National Wildlife Refuge. Now, as it turns out, Lexham is a Canadian firm, but the Bakken National Wildlife Refuge is just formed, I think, in 2000, along with the expansion of the Great Sand Dunes National Monument into the Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve. But that piece of land comes from a Baca land grant, which was given to Juan Luis Baca by the King of Spain back before the United States owned this area. So it's a large chunk of land. At one time, back in the 80s and 70s, it was owned by a Canadian named Maurice Strong, who came down to own the thing. And at that point, he severed the mineral rights from the surface rights. So then the mineral rights became a commodity to be owned. It was then sold to another local individual, Gary Boyce. Now, both Maurice Strong and Gary Boyce tried to make billions by selling the water from the aquifer that's in the San Luis Valley over to the Denver area that failed because of local environmentalists. But then an interesting thing happened, and that is that the Nature Conservancy came in and purchased the land for a temporary period of time until such time as the government could purchase it then to make it into this National Wildlife Refuge. And just almost as soon as that happened, Lexham then applied for these permits to drill these gas test wells. And I'm suspecting, and I worked on this, and I have a website about it. It's http://waterwatchalliance.googlepages.com, which explains all the history of this particular area. But I have a suspicion that Lexham, even though it's a Canadian firm, is in fact a government partner in this, because there was enormous collusion between the government and Lexham lawyers in trying to circumvent and completely subvert the National Environmental Policy Act procedures, which were required for any major activity on a piece of federal land. And it's now well known that the government was cooperating in secret with Lexham so that they wouldn't have to follow the federal law. So it has been a tough fight for some of the locals in that area, and I'm beginning to realize it's because of this structure of public-private partnerships. Because, and even some of the local NGOs that seem to be fighting this thing, I don't think really were. I think what they're really doing is trying to enable it in a certain way. So in a sense, then all three legs of the equation are controlled by this monster called the public-private partnership.
Well, a public-private partnership is, it was Hitler's system of economics, and we know how the German people ended up as a result of that. Today's public-private partnership is global in nature, and this is how it is that the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report can proudly proclaim that the Earth's population is to be reduced to 1 billion people. When so much power is concentrated and hidden from the public under the system, the operation of the system, all bad things can happen. That's a disturbing thing. I'd like to make a comment about the man, Maurice Strong, who headed the
camp. Well, before you talk about Maurice Strong, let's do that, and then if you could possibly comment on the structure of the problem that we have, that would be a welcome comment, too. Go ahead, Bob, about Maurice Strong.
Well, Maurice Strong is the high-ranking official at the United Nations. He was the man who was in charge of the Earth Summit, the Rio de Janeiro conference that adopted Agenda 21 in 1992. At that conference, he said, quote, "Current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class involving high meat intake, use of fossil fuels, appliances, that means refrigeration, home and work air conditioning, and suburban housing are not sustainable." So he's really the quarterback of the globalist movement for sustainable development. Now, we jump forward a few years, and his son got involved in the oil for food scandal that ravaged Africa.
And it turns out, Iraq, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It turns out that the father, Maurice Strong, was in the middle of that himself. So he had all kinds of legal problems, criminal legal problems. So where he is now is he's fled the Western world. He is now in charge of implementing sustainable development policies in China, because while in China, no Western government can catch him and consequence him for his criminal activities in this scam. Maurice Strong is a billionaire out of Canada and a greedy son of a gun who heads the UN's Environment and Development Program, engineered as Sustainable Development Agenda 21.
If I recall correctly, we had Doc Timothy Ball on last week, and I believed he had mentioned that Maurice Strong was somewhat affiliated with the China and some the smaller cars that they're coming out with. And I don't know if there's a relationship there.
Yeah, he and George Soros have been apparently trying to work out a deal where they manufacture small, cheap cars in China and then sell them to the West, and evidently probably to make another billion. But I think the more interesting comment, Melody, was that it was Maurice Strong who set the terms of reference. He's the guy who founded the United Nations Environmental Program and the Earth Council and wrote the Earth Charter and has just done so many things you'd have to, you know, one of those people with the infinite bios. But he was a founding partner of the Framework Council on Climate Change, which set the terms of reference, quote unquote, for future climate research, and then the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change was formed out of that. And the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is the international body made of governments, which has now put out four assessment reports in which they basically take the work of scientists and select from it, cherry-pick from it, the things that they want to say, that basically humans are causing global warming and that it's going to be a catastrophe, even though the scientists rarely agree with that. But he set the terms of reference as follows. That is that climate change itself is defined as changes to the climate caused by human beings, rather than focusing on climate change as a natural process. And of course, we know that natural climate change, and this came out in last week's interview, is a very powerful and persistent force. It's always getting warmer or colder on long-term fluctuations and short-term fluctuations, some of large magnitude and some of small magnitude. But that's invisible to the granting agencies, because they don't grant money for scientific research about natural climate change, only the kind of climate change that would be supportive of this proposition that humans are causing the warming. So here's a guy with a ninth grade education only who's now set the terms of reference for a scientific endeavor which has spanned now a good 20 years and which, you know, tens of billions of dollars have been spent around the world. Well, tens of billions just in the United States, probably well over 100 billion internationally. So he is quite the amazing character and at the center of many, many things here. The United Nations Environmental Program, the International Governmental Panel on Climate Change, the Earth Charter, and, as it turns out, our own little Baca National Wildlife Refuge. He has a history there and was a very important player in determining what's happening there right now, because he severed the mineral rights, the subsurface gas and oil rights, from the surface rights. So, quite a character.
It's incredible. You know, the thought, most of us as Americans think that we're in control of our destiny, that our government works for us, and that we live by a set of principles that keep us from falling into a dark age. Well, I can guarantee you that all of us, or all of our descendants, living in a world where population is reduced to 1 billion people, where private property has been abolished, will, if we have any window to the past, look back on this era when people like Maurice Strong and Al Gore made their billions by selling this schlock science to a capable and otherwise informed American public to our detriment, such that we find the humanity falls into a dark age that makes the last dark age look bright.
Yes. Yeah, the cynicism is so huge. I mean, it was Maurice Strong who founded the Chicago Climate Exchange, which would be the first international trading outfit that would make billions from any kind of carbon tax or cap and trade system. Al Gore, of course, is also poised to make a fortune if these very, very punitive carbon taxes or cap and trade systems are passed. And of course, Obama is trying to do that. So these guys are Murray Strong has always been very curious to me, because here's the guy who founded the Rio Earth Summit, or he was Secretary General of the UN in charge of the Rio Earth Summit. He was the guy who organized the Stockholm International Environmental Conference in 1972. Okay, so he wears this white hat, white knight saving the environment. But he made his billions on gas and oil and water in Canada, and he has been CEO of many, many companies and has founded many, many United Nations organizations. So here's a guy who's, I guess he said he was capitalistic in methodology and socialistic in ideology. What that means is communism for the masses and fascism for the very few rich, I guess.
Well, I think that's exactly right. You know, I remember back to seventh grade where my teacher would say, the world will be at a dangerous point when, in the early 21st century, communism adopts a new system of economics. And that new system of economics is the same system that Adolf Hitler adopted. So when a communist system of justice joins with a fascist system of economics, and that is the definition of sustainable development, that's just the political threat that will become, and I think has become, the greatest threat in all of human history. That's why it's so important that people spend a little time, it takes a little time, to understand the nature of sustainable development. It's why we have our pamphlets, you know, our original one is only 28 pages, it's a pamphlet size, 28 pages, it's called Understanding Sustainable Development, Agenda 21.
Let me go ahead and do a station ID here, that you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community-supported radio, and we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And we also have, if you want to have any questions, to you can email us at khen.dj@gmail.com. And this, again, this is Melody, and my guest tonight is Michael Shaw, and my co-host is Professor Carlstrom. And the subject tonight is, we're talking about Agenda 21 and all the tentacles that kind of come off of it.
Before we get going again, Michael, could you just plug your website again and tell us about this toolbox of pamphlets that our listeners might be able to tap into?
Well, our website is easy enough.